Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend.
Kramer, England.
Yeah. Ooh, what a relief. What a palate cleanser.
It was. Thank goodness. Sheesh.
Yikes. If you watched our last episode, we talked to Sid and Olivia, the stars, yes, the redacted stars of 2025's War of the Worlds, starring Ice Cube and Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
And Olivia De Laurentiis and Sidney Heller.
Yeah.
Who were cut out of the film.
Yeah. So great to have them. They did. I loved all their insight. That was so.
Yeah.
That was what made it worth it, because that movie still sucks.
Yeah, and they had not seen the movie when they came on our show. And I just talked to Olivia. She just watched it for the first time for a Patreon stream over on their Patreon channel. And she was like, "Oh wow, you guys weren't lying. Like, that was the worst movie I've ever seen." And I was like, Yeah. And there's more things that I wanted to ask them that I didn't get to ask them. Like, I wanted to say, like, because, like, as an actor, if I had been cast in 2020 in War of the Worlds that is being produced by Universal Pictures, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm in a big movie here. Like, this is a big, because I know that the last time War of the Worlds was adapted was the movie we're talking about today, which is the 2005 adaptation by Steven Spielberg starring Tom Cruise. So I'm like, oh, I'm in the next one.
I would be, and
I wanted to ask them that, like, did you initially at least feel like, oh, this is cool? Like, this, like, it's not like an indie movie being produced by a studio you've never heard of, and it's just like some indie alien invasion film, and you have no idea whether or not it's going to take off.
Yeah.
It's a known property with, like, actual stars attached to it.
Yeah.
Made by a major studio.
Yeah.
So, and I did ask Olivia that, and she was like, yeah, initially I did feel like that. And she goes, and then when I got the script and I started showing up to the Zoom meetings to, like, film it, she's like, I started being like, uh-oh, this might not be very good.
Oh no. What did I do?
Yeah. And then she said she sort of, like, forgot it existed for several years when it just didn't come out, when it didn't come out for 5 years.
Yeah.
And anyway, we decided we were going to watch Steven Spielberg's movie because we needed to recover.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our spoiler-free thoughts, even though it's like, this is a 20-year-old movie. So, you know,
might as well
if you've never seen it and you want to watch along. What is your spoiler-free reaction to War of the Worlds 2005, Kramer?
So my reaction to this movie, spoiler-free, is there's a lot of really, really good stuff in this movie. There's a lot to really love about this movie. There's great action. There's there's some really, really tense scenes. And as I think Sid said last week that oh my goodness, Dakota Fanning is amazing in this movie. So there's some really good performances and really, really cool stuff. But overall, I'm still disappointed in the movie. There's something missing, which we will get into when we can spoil it, because so much of it has to do with the ending and just kind of the arc overall of Tom Cruise's character. There's just something for me emotionally in the movie that leaves me wanting a lot more, in a bad way. And so I think there's some stuff that I really wish they could have done better, but it's still, again, this is a fun ride. Like, there's a lot of really, really cool stuff in here. That's like, wow, that was pretty amazing. And you know, most of the reviews I read are kind of like that, right? They're like, oh yeah, it's a great popcorn movie. There's a lot of fun, but it's kind of missing some of that emotional core. So that's kind of my overall thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Basically the same. I feel like I've always enjoyed this movie from the first time I saw it in the theater. Every time I've rewatched it, I feel like I always like it a little bit more than I remembered liking it the previous time. But you're right. There's something about the ending that always feels just a little, like, unfulfilling or unsatisfying. And also, even at the end this time, I was like, I don't necessarily disagree with the logic of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really have a problem with, like, how the story resolves in just a straight up, like, storytelling sense. But there is something emotionally, you're right, that feels like a little unearned or,
yeah. Unearned is something I was going to say as well. It's a great word.
Yeah. And it's, I can't ever quite put my finger on it. Cause I'm like, how would I change this ending to make it feel more iconic or more satisfying or to land in a really, really satisfying, really fulfilling way. And I'm not sure what the answer is, because the fact of the matter is there is so much really strong craft on display here. Yeah. There's so much. Yes. I mean, Steven Spielberg is just such such an accomplished and smart filmmaker. The way that he works with his camera team and his lighting team and his effects team, the actors are all doing absolutely top-notch work. There are several set pieces in this film that are really riveting, and from a writing standpoint and an acting standpoint, that are really like compelling, interesting. In many ways, it's a movie that punches above its narrative weight. The narrative could be very just straightforward and simple and just kind of like a fun, plucky alien invasion film. And this movie manages at many different moments to get a lot deeper and a lot more interesting than you would expect it to.
Yeah.
And then it is just that, like, at the end, you don't feel like they land it in a way that, that feels like it's as impactful as some of those earlier scenes, you know?
Yeah. I think I have an idea of how it could have ended a little more satisfying. Not to say that it would fix the whole thing, but we can get to that when we get to it, but
let's get to it. So that's our spoiler free thoughts. If you want to watch our full thoughts, go to the full video. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. So War of the Worlds, 2005, boy, such a better movie than
it's 2025. It's not even close.
It's insane how much better this movie is.
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think it's a good place to start, because this is what I know. Like, I've never read War of the Worlds, the book. Mm-hmm. Okay, it came out in 1898, I believe, which is insane to me. Mm-hmm. You know, written by H.G. Wells. His story is all from a first-person perspective of just kind of like writing in a journal of a guy who's experiencing this world takeover by Martians, and it's kind of like him going through his thoughts and things like that. I always thought that the book was more like this movie, and that's just because this is my first experience with World of the Worlds, you know, when it came out in 2005. Mm-hmm. And it really is not like that, you know, like, and as we talked about, the War of the Worlds 2025 is almost a more faithful adaptation because of the fact of it's just someone experiencing something. It's just done in such a horrible way.
Yeah.
So this take of it, this Steven Spielberg's take on this, it was written by
David Koepp and somebody else.
David Koepp and Josh Friedman. I think David Koepp mainly worked on it. I think Steven Spielberg work on movies all the time.
He probably came in and did some punch-ups. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, David Koepp is an extremely talented writer. And the thing that I think he did the best job of is this storyline of a very absent kind of deadbeat dad being stuck with his kids, trying to get them back to their mom in an alien invasion.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The similarities between the Ice Cube movie and this one, where it's like this father who's got a daughter and a son, and he's got a better relationship with his daughter than he does with his son. But overall, he's not a very good dad, and he doesn't really know how to show up for it. He's lost his wife in one. Yeah. It's because she died, and the other, it's because they're divorced. And throughout the arc of the film, he's trying to learn how to be a better father and how show up for his kids in a better way. And both of the movies have that kind of arc for the main character, but it's just handled much better, at least in the first two acts of this film.
That's
for the 2005 version.
Yep. And that's where I think it is really lacking. So I love this story of a bad dad having to connect with his kids during the end of the world. And I really felt very unsatisfied with the conclusion at the end. Like you said, the first two acts are really good at that. And then the third act kind of strays, and it doesn't really resolve it emotionally in the way that I like. But that's kind of that. I always found that interesting, that that's originally H.G. Wells there's no family involved. Like, it's just a guy And I think he's trying to get to his brother. So
I think all the thing that all of the adaptations have, like this the original, and then like the Orson Welles radio play, and all, you know, and first of all, they all do the tripods thing. I think the tripods were in the original book too, that like the Martians have these robot tripods that they sort of invade in. That's always part of it. But I think that they all have this idea of like this thing being observed in a kind of, from a kind of mundane perspective, like from an ordinary person just watching this extraordinary event unfold.
Yes.
And I, you know, I do like the way that I like this character, that Ray Ferrier, that Tom Cruise plays, that he's just this very normal everyman who's really flawed, and it's just him doing his best in a very difficult situation. And I, you know, it's kind of like what I like about Signs, where it's just sort of, you know, which obviously M. Night Shyamalan was very much so inspired by War of the Worlds as well, with this idea of like an alien invasion movie that's just seen from the perspective of a normal person, and not, we're not in, you know, like in this movie, similar to Signs, we're never like inside of war rooms at the White House where they're strategizing how we're going to take on the alien threat. We're just seeing it from the perspective of someone who's just caught up in the middle of it, who's just trying to get to safety, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we open this movie with a narration from Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman. And we start looking at like bacteria, you know, like, and that's the opening image. And then the camera pulls out to reveal a dewdrop on a leaf. And then we pull back, you know, and Morgan Freeman is talking about how nobody, you know, in the early 21st century would have believed that we had been observed by
intelligences, you know, that are far away. Yeah.
They're looking at us like ants, you know, they're looking at us like insects. And and then we basically go to our introduction of Ray Ferrier. And boy, I like right off the bat, Steven Spielberg's like pulling out the tricks with this crane shot. It's like it's almost like today it would be a drone shot, but I don't know that we had drones in 2005. No. But we start way far back, and he is a lift operator at like a freight yard, where he he's a crane,
like a crane container operator.
That moves shipping containers. But we start like way far out, and the camera goes all the way in, but then it turns, it makes like a 180 turn to look at him in the cockpit, and it looks like it's probably done with visual effects, but it's a really cool camera move. We, you know, that I think mostly is probably practical, and then the last part of it is augmented with some kind of
something.
But
it is a great shot. And I mean, we get into it pretty quick. He's, you know, he leaves that job, and he's got union regulations, and he first starts out, and the guy's like, you know what your problem is? He's like, oh, I'm sure there's a few women who could tell you what it is. So immediately then, we get an idea that, oh, he's, you know, into his character.
Yeah, and then we also get an idea into his character by seeing that he drives like an absolute maniac on his way home. Like immediately I was like, dude, you're a psycho. like whenever I see people in movies driving like this, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
You can't drive like that. You're going to get pulled over and taken. Your license is going to get taken away.
There are children around. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, he's just peeling around corners and like burning rubber, you know, like he's like drifting in his like, you know, 1967 Ford Dodge Charger or whatever, I don't know,
whatever it is.
And but I think the idea is that Ray's just kind of like a immature, reckless gearhead, you know, kind of salt of the earth kind of guy. And he pulls into his house, which looks like he lives in like Queens, in New York, and his wife is dropping off his kids, and he's late for the appointment. So right off the bat, we're like, oh, Ray's, not only does Ray drive like an absolute insane person, like a sociopath, but he is late to meet his wife for the exchange of their kids.
Yeah. And I mean, the kids get out of the car, and you can tell, I mean, the older son, Robbie, he really doesn't want to be there. You can tell. And he like just walks past and goes up into the house, or tries to get into the house. And then his daughter, Rachel, she is she doesn't really want to be there, but she still gives her dad a hug, and you can tell she is very wise beyond her years, right? Like, she's kind of like an adult in a, I don't know, 10-year-old's body, whatever age.
That's just the Dakota Fanning effect too. It's like, it didn't matter what movie she was doing when she was a kid. She just brought an energy to every character that was like, I'm a 40-year-old inside of a 10-year-old's body.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you would just kind of be like, okay, that's the character now, because that was sort of her acting style.
Yeah.
She just seemed like a kid who learned how to act by watching older actors like Diane Wiest and Meryl Streep and, you know, like Annette Bening. And she was like, I'll just be like them. I'll just imitate them. And it's like, well, that doesn't really make sense for a 10-year-old girl, but sure, why not?
and it worked very, very well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. She's incredible in this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, his son calls him Ray and you know, refuses to call him dad. Dakota Fanning calls him dad. But you can also tell that she's kind of bummed out to be dropped out of dad's house, that nobody really likes being at dad's house.
And you can tell that there's still some tension between Ray and his ex-wife, played by Miranda Otto,
who's a great actress. Lord of the Rings fame.
Yeah. And she, like, Steven Spielberg just gets these huge actors to, like, Amy Ryan is in this movie for like 10 seconds.
I had no idea Amy Ryan was in this movie. And I was like, oh, that's Amy Ryan.
Yeah, I was like, is that Amy Ryan? What? Why is she in this movie? Of course, she probably wasn't nearly as big back then, but
I think this was before she became a known name.
I think it was. Yeah.
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 But he gets Miranda Otto, who's, you know, she was pregnant apparently in real life, and she turned down the role, and then they're like, well, we'll just write the character as pregnant. And they got her to be in it. She probably only filmed like 2 days.
Yeah.
2 or 3 days, whatever. But there's still some tension between them, you know, and she's making sure he has all his stuff, but his milk has gone bad. And like, you know, he doesn't really take care of himself.
Yeah. She kind of comes into his house to make sure that the house is suitable for the kids. And he's like, he's bothered by that. He's like, I don't like you coming in here sort of policing my house and going through my stuff. And there's also like a little bit of tension between him and her new husband, Tim. Yep. And, you know, it seems like the kids like Tim more, and it looks like
they really love Tim.
He makes a comment on their new car, like, oh yeah, Tim, look at this car. It looks like a nice, expensive, safe car, you know, you know, 'cause he drives the car that doesn't make any sense for a guy with kids to drive, but and it's like, oh wow, Tim, look, nice, expensive,
it really,
safe car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is a very, very great characterization of Ray, and his whole world and the type of person that he is and this relationship that he has with his kids. And I mean, that's all done within the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. It's like, we've done a lot of Tom Cruise this year. We've talked about a lot of between all the Mission Impossible movies that we did and like Minority Report. And we've done a lot of Tom Cruise, and this is another great performance from him. I like the details that he brings to this character, where it's not just like Tom Cruise doing Tom Cruise stuff, but he really he leans into making Ray kind of unlikable, and like the messiness of Ray and the flaws of Ray. And I like that as a leading man in Hollywood, he's not afraid to play a character who's got cracks and flaws and he doesn't always have to be likable Ethan Hunt, you know?
Yeah.
I will say, having him yell the name Rachel as many times as he did in this movie made me think a lot about Mission Impossible 3.
Oh yeah. 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 That's pretty funny. He does do a great job, and he actually doesn't run as much as I remembered.
Only one real, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's in the first act. Yeah.
Which,
and then maybe like a little bit at the end, but
I was like, oh, I thought he ran a lot more in this movie, but that's okay. But after this, after his ex-wife leaves, he's playing catch with his son, which again is like another, I love this scene, how it all plays out. You know, he's like showing off to his daughter, like, oh, between me and my brother, we know everything. And she's like, what's the capital of Australia? And he's like, oh, that's what my brother knows, you know? And
great
then,
dad joke. I said out loud when we were watching, I was like, that's a great dad joke. Between me and my brother, we know everything. And then the kid asks you a question, you go, that's the one my brother knows. That's
It's great. And then you see that Robbie's like, yeah, it was funny the first 100 times you told it to us, right? So like, you get this dynamic of like, the girl still is playing with him, you know, and she still has some relationship, but the son is just obviously really hates him.
And also, my favorite thing is they walk outside to have a catch, and Ray has a Yankees hat on.
Yes, yeah.
And Robbie pulls a Boston Red Sox hat on and puts that on, and it's like done in defiance of his father.
Yes.
Like, it's very clear that he's like Red Sox.
Well,
and Ray's like, oh, Boston, you know, and that's also where they live with their, you know, yeah. But it's basically him saying like, yes, I prefer Tim and Boston and his yeah. house over you.
Yeah.
And
they get in an argument, right? Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise, he throws a really fast pitch, which hurts his son's hand. And then when Tom Cruise throws it back the next time, I love this movie. I still love this like exchange that they have, but the son just puts his glove down and it goes right through his window.
Yeah.
Right through Tom Cruise's window.
Yeah.
And then he takes off his hood and he turns his hat around as he walks away from his dad to show him the Boston Red Sox yeah. logo, which I'm like, that's so genius. Like,
yeah.
What a great scene to show their dynamic. And also just like, the son is really like, really doesn't like his dad.
Oh yeah. Like the fact, like it, there's so much good visual storytelling oh, yeah. and so yeah. much good storytelling with the performances and like the blocking. Yeah. It's just Steven Spielberg just being good at
yeah.
blocking and good at yeah. cinematic storytelling. But yeah, so Ray goes back inside and tells his daughter to order food because yeah. there's no food in the house. And he goes upstairs to go to sleep because he's, you know, he's got 12 hours off before his next yeah. shift, you know? And then, he wakes up and he comes downstairs and finds his daughter watching TV. I don't know if you saw this, but like, did you notice the Easter egg here that when she was flipping through channels and they're showing, we see her watching TV and like there,
yeah.
there's weather reports about weird yeah, yeah. weather events and lightning storms going on in the world. Obviously that's foreshadowing yeah. what's about to happen right. in the movie. But as she's flipping through channels to find the whatever kids show it is that she yeah. lands on, I think it's SpongeBob.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
One of the shows that she passes is that old movie that Steven Spielberg talks about in the movie. What's the movie about his childhood? What's the fake name that he gives his family?
Yeah.
The Feldmans the
oh God. Hold on. It's the
one that he did. Tony Kushner wrote the screenplay and
why is it not?
Yeah. It's
The Fablemans. There we go.
There's a big storyline in the Fablemans about how when Steven Spielberg was a kid, he was obsessed with this scene from this movie where a train hits a car off of like these train tracks, and he's obsessed with how they did it with models and how they composited it into.
Oh, nice.
So he's obsessed with like learning how they did. So he uses like his model train, and he's always trying to recreate it in his house mm-hmm. with his Super 8 camera and trying to recreate the shot. And as Dakota Fanning is flipping through channels, that shot from that movie is on one of the shows. And I was like, I never would have known that if I hadn't seen The Fablemans. But now I know that that's like a really important shot yeah. from a movie from Steven yeah. Spielberg's childhood.
That's funny because I haven't seen The Fablemans yet. So,
well,
but yeah, I've heard it's good. It's not that I don't want to see it. I just haven't, but
it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ray wakes up and he comes downstairs and he's, you know, like eats some of the food that,
yeah.
that Dakota Fanning ordered, but she ordered from like a vegetarian place. And he's like, what is this?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you know, it's the veggie place.
Hummus. Yeah.
He's like, why? And she's like, you said order food. He goes, yeah. She said, you said order. And he goes,
yeah
food.
Yeah.
But again, like Ray's just sort of like, he's just kind of a jerk and he's just yeah. kind of, you know, but I love this that she's like, he's like, where's Robbie? And he's like,
yeah,
she's like, oh, he left. He's like, how? She's like, you took your car.
Yeah.
And
he's like, he goes outside and he's pissed.
Yeah.
And then, but everybody is looking at the storm.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, what's going on? So everybody's distracted by the storm. And then he goes in the backyard with Rachel and he's like, everybody's weirded out by this storm, and then this is when lightning starts hitting.
Which Amy again, just, Ryan comes yeah, out with her baby, and I was like, "Oh, Amy Ryan, yeah." But yet that he notices that the wind is blowing toward the storm, which is kind of unnatural. And yeah. then yeah, lightning starts hitting, but it's not. I love the blocking of this scene too. That initially he's just excited by this weather phenomenon that he's witnessing, and Rachel's scared, and she's telling him like, "Dad, I want to go inside," and then. Eventually, once the lightning gets closer, he agrees to go inside. But then all of a sudden, it starts just hitting over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I loved the escalation of watching him all of a sudden realize, like, oh, this is weird. And I like what the script does here, too, because they get under the table.
Yeah.
And then Tom Cruise whispers, where's the thunder? And it's like, for the first time, you realize as an audience member, like, yeah, if lightning hits 20 times and all you're hearing is like a,
yeah yeah
like where's the crack yeah. where's the
yeah
you know
and, yeah it's and I do love he gets under the table, which is it's played for laughs, which it is kind of like, it is a funny moment. But then he says that, which makes it like, what the heck is going on? I mean, we as the audience know, but it's such a great buildup. Like it really just this huge foreshadowing of something is not right. And it just, it also just pulls it out just a little bit longer. Cause he's like, listen, I got to go find Robbie. And he goes out and Robbie comes up and all the cars and everything, nothing is working.
Yeah.
Like, or actually before this, he looks at his watch, which again, Tom Cruise wears his watch by his palm rather than on his, he wears it right here, which I always find a funny thing that Tom Cruise does.
He does it in Minority Report too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He does. He looks at his watch like that. I don't know if that's a military thing or something.
I don't know.
Anyway, so he does that. His watch isn't working. The phone isn't working. The fridge isn't working. Nothing's working. He sees Robbie. He's pissed. He's like, if you do that again, I'm going to call the cops, right?
He was like, Robbie, you got to go in there and watch your sister. I'm going to go figure out what's going on. And then he's like, and also, Robbie, if you ever take my car again without a license, I'm calling the cops. Yeah. And then I love this thing that he does that's like such a like dad thing.
Yes.
When he looks at him, he goes, Robbie, like that.
He's and like, go. Yeah.
When he smacks it to get him to go and he's like, Robbie.
Yeah. I love that
like,
too.
That's such a like angry dad thing where it's like, dude, I'm going to.
And it is great again. Like, but he does show at least that he cares about his kids. Like obviously he has a rough time, but he does care.
It's pretty clear. Like throughout this whole opening act that it hurts him that Robbie and him have such a adversarial relationship.
Yeah, but he's obviously not handling it in the right way.
No,
but because he doesn't know how.
Yeah, but anyway, he takes off to go figure out what's going on, and he passes his friend who's a mechanic working on a van,
and, minivan. You
know, and like he gives the guy like a tip on how to maybe start it because the guy
changed the solenoid. Oh yeah, that's what I told you. I told you the solenoid.
So he's like, all right. So then they go down to where a bunch of people are gathering in sort of the downtown area of where he lives, where one of the lightning strikes happened. And it's sort of like this little crater in the earth. And this is the point of the movie where I immediately start going like, everybody needs to get out of there. And the fact that everyone is standing like, especially once they start hearing the noises underground and and everyone starts getting closer and closer to it. And like, you know, but I love the way that Spielberg does this whole sequence. I love that he takes his time with it, that I love the pacing of it, that like he really takes his time with the build up to it. It's a great sequence.
Yeah. And they're all looking and it's, you know, everybody's looking at, and they said like 47 times that it hit in one spot or whatever. And then it starts cracking and it cracks out. And I love how it cracks this church open.
This shot and then of the front of the church moving in a spiral, and it moves in front of the sun.
Yeah.
And which I'm pretty sure is a practical shot. I think they built a set that actually like was like a rotating piece of concrete, which is, it's just cool. It's just like, it's almost like a whirlpool in water, but in concrete starts to form. And this is when people start to finally like run away. Like once the street is like opening up, people are starting, but it's still like everyone's just backing up just far enough to be outside of where I just think I'd be like, oh, I got like, cause in my mind, it's like, there's a lot in this movie that feels very post 9/11 because this movie came out in 2005. And it seems like there's a lot of imagery that is alluding back to that feeling of that day. But I'm thinking all of these characters in this 2005 New York are survivors of 9/11. Like they were there when it happened. Yeah. And I'm thinking you guys know better well enough to know that if the ground starts opening up, get out, run.
You probably leave.
Like, you don't stick around. You're not sticking around to like see what's happening. Like you get out of there. Like you know, but everybody is, you know, and then there's part of me that also goes like, how would I react if something had just come out of the sky and now was coming up out of the ground? Like, would there be part of me that would want, cause there were people who it's like, they watched both planes hit the towers and then they sat there and filmed it and didn't run away until the towers started coming down.
Crumbling down. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's it definitely is. I think even David Koepp was saying he tried to avoid the 9/11 imagery as much as possible, but it's there and it is kind of like, it is definitely influenced by it. It's not like they're shying away from it or saying it didn't happen, but I think they were trying to be, I mean, they're obviously, you know, they're drawing comparisons.
Yeah.
especially after this. I mean, the tripod comes up out of the ground, and then the sound that it makes. I have always been terrified by this sound.
Yeah, it's so effective. Oh, and these are largely visual effects that still hold up. They're way better than the 2025 movie's visual effects. But this thing still looks very physically imposing. And again, this is like Spielberg being, we talked about this on the Minority Report episode, but Spielberg and his camera team are good at color grading and lighting in a way that blends digital effects well with film and with film grain. And so there's a way that they light and shoot these things as they come up, and the way that they move the tripod in front of the sun and create, you know, lens flares and lighting glare that really makes it blend into the environment in a way that feels more organic. It doesn't feel like a cartoon thing that was pasted on top of a film image.
But this
horn that these things blare out is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, from the first time you see it, like, you know, that's not good.
Yeah. Like, and I love this because they start with the horn and then everybody starts dying. They start disintegrating people.
It's like so immediately gnarly.
Oh,
like, when you're watching this, it's like, oh my goodness, it is just vaporizing people.
Yeah. They blow up into a cloud of ash.
Yeah.
And, but every time after that, anytime you hear the horn, it's immediately like it's triggering.
Yep.
Like it's like to the characters and to me as an audience member, like, oh man, that horn means death. Like that is, you are going to die if you don't find a place to hide. And so it's so effective at that first time they use it. And then the rest of the movie, I'm like, oh man, that horn is scary.
Like, I've also always loved this shot of like the person who was filming on their camcorder gets vaporized and their camera falls on the ground, and Spielberg watches people getting vaporized through the lens of the camera on the ground. Great shot. Tom Cruise comes around, he runs away and comes around the corner to his friends, and he's just got this look on his face like, and you know, Tom, he's just so good at like selling stuff like this, just selling the feeling of like, what did I just see and what is going on. And then the tripod starts coming around the corner, and so he's just, now he's Tom Cruise running.
Yeah.
And he's just booking it, and people are vaporizing right in front of him, and he's just getting coated in their ashes. Like it's this movie is surprisingly dark in many, many different sequences.
It
gives the whole entire film a really grounded, emotional feel. And this sequence is traumatic to watch this man like running through the vaporized, you know, bone dust of people who are just getting blown up in front of him.
Yeah.
And watching him in real time being like psychologically scarred by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it, you're totally right. It is very dark, and he runs through the ashes. It's a great sequence because, I mean, it's scary. He's got to run through all these different things, and people are, and he sees just clothes falling from the, you know, falling from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
All these people who have, you know, been vaporized. But when he gets home, it's an extremely intense sequence, and then it just stops.
Yep.
And then we see Dakota Fanning, and she's just looking up at him because he just walks in his house, and he's just like kind of not really there. He's just like walking, and he sits down and like, Dad, what are you covered in? Like, what's going on? What did you see? And he, you know, I think Robbie or one of them touch him, and he like freaks out. Right. And then he sees that he's covered in all these ashes, and he like goes into the bathroom, and he's just like, this whole scene is very, very effective to me.
Yeah. The fact that he is sort of like a soldier who just was in
like PTSD. Horrific,
horrific battle, and he's got shell shock. And then they sort of wake him up, and he looks, and it's like if he was covered in blood and guts, you know, but he's covered in the ash of all these people, and he just gets up, and he's just freaking. Yeah. And then he's looking at himself in the mirror, and he throws water in his face, and it's like, okay. And then he comes out of the bathroom, and he goes, we're leaving this house in 60 seconds.
Yep.
And his kids are, I love the performance of both the kids, especially Dakota Fanning, but they're both like, Dad, what's going on? What is happening? And he's just like, Robbie, I need you to fill this up with food. I need you. Like, and he's like, you know, and then he's just like, yeah. you know, and goes upstairs. He gets his gun. This is a, you know, good yep. writing device. And the way that yep. it's introduced, it's like, this is a Chekhov's gun. It's like the fact yep. that he's pulling this out and Spielberg is letting us watch this yep. moment happen. It means something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Ray's got a gun and he's bringing his gun with him.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. And they go, they get back to the, they have their box, they're going and they get back to that van and they get in the van and they're, I mean,
and the car yeah. starts, but yeah, I love this scene too, that his friend comes over, his mechanic friend. And he's like, yeah. he's like, hey, Ray, he's like, what are you doing, man? He's like, get out yeah. of the car. He's like, I need to, that's a customer's van. And I love this, that Ray's like trying to tell his friend. He's like, hey yeah. man, get in the car, get in the yeah. car. And he's trying to explain it to him. And his kids still don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like his kids are still like, dad, what is going on? Yeah. And he's just like, he can't tell them because he's like, I've just got to get you out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's too late. Like the tripod is coming and he drives away. And in the rearview mirror, we yeah. just see that guy just vaporize yeah. and he's gone. And I did love this, that again, that 9/11 reference, Dakota Fanning. This is the kids for the first time start seeing things blowing up and they're, yeah. you know, and Dakota Fanning goes, is that the terrorists?
Yeah. 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 And this scene crazy, like they're driving away and then like this freeway behind their house just like blows apart. And this huge tanker goes over their house and explodes. And it's like, it looks really, really good.
Oh, it's like, crazy.
Yeah.
And then and then we do this crazy one-er that's like maybe the most popular,
yeah.
one of the most popular one-ers from, you know, Spielberg's career, yeah. which you can see how it's digitally pieced together
yeah,
now
yeah.
a lot easier yeah. than you could in 2005. But I still love it. I still love
yeah.
The whole thing is like, Ray is still trying to figure out, like in Ray's mind, it's just like, my job right now is to get my kids as far away from
yeah.
what's going on as possible. And I'll try to explain, you know, sometimes it bothers me in movies when a character just won't talk. Like when yeah. someone's like, hey, will yeah. you just tell me what's going on? And they just are like, no time, or I can't, or they,
yeah.
it,
yeah.
it can bother me when that happens. In this context, in this movie, I totally get it. That Ray's like, yeah. I don't even know how to tell you what's yeah. happening. Like, I don't even know how to explain to you, like a robot came up out of the ground
yeah.
and started vaporizing people. And I don't know what that means. I don't know, like, yeah. you know, and yeah. And like, you know, we see that Dakota Fanning, she's freaking out. And this
yeah.
is, I mean, she's, yeah. her performance is so good. And her brother has this like anxiety thing that she
yeah.
does, where he's
yeah.
like, hey, put him up. You know, and he's
yeah.
trying to,
this is your space.
Yeah. yeah.
No one can come into your space. Yeah.
Yeah. And the camera is kind of going around the car and through the windows and out the windshield and under, you know, underneath the yeah. bumper.
Yeah.
And then finally, once Robbie gets Rachel to calm down, he looks at his dad and he's like, I need you to tell me everything, you know?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? Yeah.
Yeah. And he tells him, I mean, it is a great sequence, especially with Rachel, because he, you know, he later he tries to be like, hey, this is your space. And she's like, it's not working, dad.
Like, or she's like, that's not how to do it.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, hey, you're not you even know, doing it right. This is you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But basically Ray's plan is like, I'm going to take them to their mom's house in Boston because
yeah.
I don't know what else to do. But he's also going to take the back roads because he knows pretty much early on, like, we have the only working car. And yeah. Ray understands. I mean, the reason why Ray grabs his gun too isn't like to fight off the aliens that came up out of the ground.
No.
He knows, I'm going to get my kids in that one working car, and yeah. there are going to be other people who are going to want to fight yep. me for this car.
Which
and,
is, it's a great payoff later
in
just a little bit. But yeah, I love, and I can't remember. I don't think they're going to Boston because that's where her parents are.
Yeah,
but they do wind up getting pretty immediately to his ex-wife's house, which is somewhere kind of close.
Yeah,
and nothing has happened there. And I like this scene too because they go in and he's like, oh, you know, they're not here. They're going to Boston. They're going to your grandma's house. And
that's right.
And then he tries to connect with his kids, and he's like, Robbie, I told you to grab food. Like, you, what is this? And he's like, that's all you had in your fridge.
Yeah.
So there's nothing there. There's like ketchup and mustard and like peanut butter.
Yeah.
And then, so he tries to make a sandwich for his kids and he's like, oh, he's trying to connect with them, trying to make them feel okay. But obviously he's not doing a job, which
trying
again,
to tell jokes about how he shuffles, you know, the
yeah.
the
he's red. Like, you'll see me deal. You want to see me deal?
Yeah.
And then he makes his peanut butter sandwich for his daughter. He's like, oh, you want this peanut butter? And she's like, I'm allergic. He's like, you're allergic. Like, since when? And she goes, birth.
Yeah.
And he's like, so he obviously still, again, they're driving home the fact that he does not really know.
He's just not a very attentive or but yeah, I like this, that like, he's trying to be as normal. He's like, okay, we got somewhere safe. This neighborhood hasn't been destroyed. And at this point too, like there's, like Ray doesn't, there's the TV's not working. The radio's not working.
No.
So Ray doesn't know, like, is it only my area or is it the entire world? And so I think he kind of maybe reasonably thinks, who knows, maybe we're safe here. And he's trying to sort of calm his kids down. But yeah, then when Robbie, he's like, Robbie and I will have peanut butter sandwiches. And Robbie's like, I'm not hungry. And he just picks up his sandwich and throws it at the window.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's good. Again, the visual storytelling of like earlier, he threw the ball through the window and now he throws the sandwich at the window and then he goes and like stands in front of the window and he's like, let me just think here.
Yeah.
And as the sandwich is like sliding down the window, I just thought this was all like good blocking. It's just good.
Oh yeah.
It's good directing. It's good, you know?
Yeah.
But he decides we're going to spend the night here and we're going to do it in the basement. And the kids are like upset about that too. They're like,
I want to sleep
in my bed. But he kind of rightly is like, we're not safe up there. And while they're downstairs in the middle of the night, you know, more lightning starts to happen outside. And then like something crazy happens and they have to go into like this, you know, underground storage room and basically just hang on for dear life. And they basically spend the night there. And in the morning, I love, this is something you drive through on the Universal studio tour. If you ever go to Universal,
it's still there.
It's still there. It's awesome. It's
still there. Okay.
Yeah. It's awesome. But the way that it appears in this movie is just so cool. Like, he wakes up and walks out of this house and the house is just, the whole top half of the house is just gone.
Yeah.
And the whole neighborhood is gone. The one thing that's like crazy here is that their car is fine.
That has always bugged me. Like, why is their car perfectly fine? Everything missed. An entire plane, a 747 or whatever it was, it completely missed the car.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's happened. A giant plane has crashed. I love this movie is like dark. There are like dead bodies in the plane that are like in the seats and hanging out of the seats. And, you know,
Ray sees
someone who's going through and collecting things, collecting food. And he kind of links up with,
some news reporter.
Yeah. A news reporter who shows him footage of what's been happening all over the world. And this is when he learns that there are more than one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, And she shows him that the lightning, there's something that comes down in the lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that I liked about this is, she's like, these things have been buried under there for who knows how long. Right.
Yeah.
And so this was a thing that Spielberg told to David Koepp. He's like, you know, everybody who does something like this, they always show the aliens coming from space. And he's like, but that's been done. So what can we do that's different? And he's like, maybe we could just have them come up from the ground. Like they were already buried there. And so David Koepp was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And I also read something else that someone said, like, the cool thing about that is that like those things have been there for a long time. Like alien, their ships have been there for a very long time. And they were probably buried there when there maybe weren't that many humans. And so these aliens have been planning this for a long time as like, basically we're kind of like cattle. They've just been letting us live. So until they get to a point where, okay, they're big, they're fat enough. Now we can go and feed on them, which is kind of like, ooh, that's like, that's pretty sinister. That's pretty creepy to think about. Anyway, I liked that interpretation of it and that they've always been down there. So in the lightning, that's how they come down. And I think that's a cool little detail that they kind of have in the script.
Yeah. So then, I mean, I feel like from even from the moment that he kind of gets into action mode and gets in this van, we start to see that like, even this guy who's kind of a deadbeat, when push comes to shove, he's doing everything he can to show up for his kids as inadequate as he is, as like, and I like these moments, like even like the moment where he's trying to connect with Rachel and trying to do the thing, but he's doing it wrong. Yeah. But I love this moment where he goes down to get his kids and he looks at her and he goes, now listen, we're going to go outside and you're going to look at me and you're not going to look anywhere else. You're going to want to look out. He goes, but I want you to keep your eyes on me. And he's trying his best to protect his daughter from the horrors of what is happening. And they go outside and they get in their car and he's trying to keep her. This is really good. Just keep looking at me. You know, don't look around.
Yeah.
And they get in the van. And now the plan is like, okay, we're going to go. Mom and Tim probably went to grandma's house in Boston. So we're going to go meet them there. We're going to take back roads so that we can avoid people who would want to take our, like, he's starting to realize too, as this movie goes on, that like this problem is maybe a lot bigger than he's equipped to deal with.
Right.
And I like that we kind of see this through the whole movie, that he's just like so in over his head and, you know,
They're driving and then they have to pull over because everybody has to go to the bathroom. And I like this imagery. David Koepp is pretty amazing at, and I mean, it's also Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know, but they're very talented at making these images that are pretty stunning. Mm-hmm. So Rachel goes to go to the bathroom and she comes up on this stream and she's looking at it. And then one body is just floating down the stream. And then like hundreds of bodies show up and are just floating down the stream. And the it's like all the reflection is on her face and she's just terrified. Right. And then Tom Cruise comes, picks her up, and he's like, I told you to not go out of, you know, sight. And he pulls her away, which is just like, it just, again, just kind of is like, everybody's dying.
I also just love that those bodies aren't explained.
We
don't know where they're coming from. There's so many images in this movie like that, where it's just like, it's not, like, there's a moment later on in this movie where a train goes by and the train's just on fire.
Yep.
It's just this whole train that the entire, and it's just, and they just watch as this train is going by really fast and the whole train's on fire. And it's never explained like what happened. Yeah. It's just sort of these images of mayhem and chaos disaster and tragedy. Yeah. And like that, it's such a potent image. This girl just watching this river full of bodies float by with no explanation. We never get an explanation as to like what happened, but all we know is just like lots of people are dying en masse everywhere. And the situation is really, really bad. So he gets his kids back in the car and he decides to let Robbie drive. And they kind of have this nice little moment where he's like, do you want to drive? And Robbie goes, I don't have my license. And he goes, well, that's never stopped you before. And it's sort of like this kind of like little joking moment. Like, you know, he's trying to connect with his son.
Yeah.
But then he falls asleep and Robbie wakes him up when.
Or wait. We missed a part.
What did we miss?
Because so he grabs Dakota Fanning and he takes her back to the car. There's a bunch of military people that come by and Robbie's like, stop. Like, wait, let me go with you, which this is something I want to know how you feel about this, because Robbie as a character, I've never really been able to make sense of him. And like this thing of him wanting to run away and join the army and help the fight never really made sense to me. And I read this thing David Koepp said, like, you know, when bad things like this happen, like with 9/11, there's a ton of kids who want, and he even said, and he referenced Gaza, like there are teenagers in Gaza who would throw bottles and rocks at tanks and stuff like that. He's like, they don't understand the consequences. So that's kind of what Robbie was doing. But I still am kind of like, it doesn't seem like that's what this character would really do. And so that's always kind of like, I've always kind of been bothered by that. But what did you think of it?
I like this aspect of the film, and I've always taken it in that exact way, that it's like, this is a commentary on, you know, all of the people who enlist after something like 9/11, the young people, 18 and 19 year old kids who see something like that and go, I'm going to go get revenge. You know, I'm mad. And, but they don't understand the actual like geopolitical magnitude of what's happening here. They don't understand the decades and decades and decades of subterfuge by the American government in the Middle East and the undermining of, you know, Middle East politics and things like that.
Right,
and
right.
the kind of sabotage of Islamic communities and things like that, that lead to terrorist organizations being built that resent the United States. Like they don't understand like everything that goes into the interplay between two governmental forces that are like all they see is like, these people hurt my teammates and I'm mad because they're on my team. And there's this sort of childish response of like, I want to get them back, even if I'm ill-equipped to do that or don't fully understand the totality of the conflict. And I feel like what this storyline with Robbie wanting to join the military and wanting to join the fight does is it brings in like the war aspect of War of the Worlds, because, you know, that like, it's kind of like the movie Rogue One, how it's, that was the first time I ever felt like Star Wars was actually a war film. Like Star Wars in Rogue One, it felt like I was watching a movie where warfare was taking place. And I like that, you know, like in the Ice Cube movie in 2025, they try to bring in this warfare aspect of like, there's a storyline of the military taking on the tripods. It's very clumsily and poorly handled. Obviously it's a terrible movie, but I like that, that aspect is present here, and that the way that they explore it, rather than like having main characters of the story who are in the military or generals who are like calling the strikes, they have Robbie, the son, who resents his father being like, I in this moment, A, I want to do anything I can to get away from my dad, and B, I'm just mad, like just the blinding rage that a young man can feel. And I like this aspect of the movie, and that his dad is trying to stop him from going with the soldiers, because he's like, my job is to keep you safe.
Like, and I think, you know, I think I never really had thought about that even, like, even when I watched it this time, I had never thought about that until after when I was reading stuff about it. And I think it does make a whole lot more sense. But we'll get to another part that I think could have made that story a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
Which is in the end, but
I agree probably with what you're going to say.
Sure. But then they do that. They switch drive it, which actually also, sorry, another thing, I really love Dakota Fanning's performance in this, because she gets pissed at her brother.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you going to do? Like, who's going to take care of me? I think she says, which is, you know, an unintentional slap in the face to Ray.
Right.
But also like, she really loves her brother. And and I thought that was just that part really gets me with her.
Like, well, that's
really,
like,
it's really good performance.
Like that's a thing that happens in like there during this, during 9/11, there would be people who would sign up and their parents and their family members would be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like when kids sign up for the military during an active armed conflict, often what happens is sometimes the family members are like, wow, we're so proud of you, son. But sometimes the family members are like, what are you doing? Like, don't, like, are you trying to hurt us? Like that, like it can be very emotionally conflicting for the families. Yes. And I again, like, I just feel like emotionally for a lot of the story, this movie is punching above its weight. This movie is dealing with themes that are complex and emotionally resonant and grounded and like dark and you know, and I think that's, I give this movie a lot of credit for that, but
absolutely. So
Robbie starts driving, and now we get another just like fantastic sequence here.
It is
where they're driving through a crowd of people, and the people start realizing, oh my gosh, there's a car, and they start wanting a ride in the car. And so Ray, he wakes his dad up, and I like this, that he's like, Ray. And then he wakes him up by saying dad. And he wakes up and he switches places with Robbie, and he's trying to like, just be like, we just got to make it through these people. But then everyone starts jumping on the car and he's trying to navigate his way through the crowd. And then there's a woman with a baby in the middle of the street. And so he swerves and runs into a
pole.
And this is crazy. Like this guy that like jumps on the windshield and is like ripping windshield apart. This scene is terrifying. And again, it's one of the aspects of this film where it's like, they're not afraid to get really dark here and talk about the nature of like how human beings, you know, are inherently
it's kind of like the breakdown of humanity and kind of the individualistic nature of trying to survive
and how fast it happens.
Yeah.
That it's like in 24 hours, people have gone, and Ray's doing it too. Ray's like, my kids before yours. Like, I want safety for my kids in this van before I care. I care more about my two kids in this car than I care about any of you.
Yeah.
And all of these people. I mean, like, they pull Ray and his son out of the car, and they're both, they're fighting, but yeah. Rachel's stuck in the car, and there's people who, and so they're trying to get back with her. We see Ray's, you know, like he's getting punched, and it, yeah. and then he shoots his gun in the air and everyone stops. And yeah. this is like, the scene is so well blocked and staged by Spielberg. Yeah. And it's in the rain, and he's like pointing his gun at everybody and getting them to back up. And he's like, I'm just going to take my kids and we're going to get out of here, you know? And then I love this where, like, you just see Tom Cruise stop and freeze. And then the camera moves
around,
and there's another guy who's got a gun on his head. And he's like, hey man, we're taking the car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then he just tells the guy, he's like, I just want to get my daughter. I just want, just, my daughter's still in the car. Let me get my daughter.
Well, yeah, he drops the gun and he says that. And the guy's like, yeah, just take your kid. Just hurry and take her. So he gets his daughter. And then I love this because when he drops his gun, another guy looks at it and he picks it up. They run into a diner. So Tom Cruise and his kids are in the diner. And then we see from the window of the diner, the car starts slowly driving away. And then the guy who picked up the gun just fires a bunch of shots into the driver's side.
Yeah.
And just showing like this chaos is still going.
She kills the guy that took the car and then they all hide over the car. And
it's a great sequence. Now I think this is pretty much the midpoint of the movie.
Yeah.
From this point on, unfortunately, this is where I feel like the wheels start kind of coming off a little bit.
I still like this next sequence.
I do.
At the boat.
Yes. The ferry is awesome.
Yeah.
But then they're walking, they get to a ferry. This is when the train goes by and they're all trying to get to the ferry, and he meets this woman, which I was kind of like, why? It's kind of a weird thing that there's this like lady that he knows and he's talking to.
I kind of like this detail that like he just runs into a friend. Yeah. Like I kind of like the idea of like being a refugee walking through it with a crowd of refugees and like running into somebody, seeing a familiar face just feels good. But it is like,
It just ends so abruptly.
It feels like maybe it should have been Amy Ryan. Like it should have been you know, like someone that we had seen earlier. You know?
I agree. If it would have been that, I think I would have liked it more, because it's like, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah.
And they get separated so quickly, and he's not able to help her. So it's kind of like, okay, was that necessary?
Yeah.
But that's not a big deal. But the thing that I do love about this scene is that Rachel looks and she sees all these birds flying, and then she sees the tripod and the horn goes off. And
like no one's looking. They're all looking one direction. Yes. And I love that. Yeah, she says the trees are moving. And then like the trees are like moving. And then this tripod just comes up out of the trees and it's on this hill. The imagery in this scene at the ferry is so cool. Like when we get these wide shots of like the tripod on a hill, just like boom, with like a spotlight coming out.
And you see Tom Cruise and his kids are looking and nobody else is looking. And then you hear the horn and everybody's head turns around.
Yeah.
And I felt very much like it's kind of like a Hitchcock move, like, you know, in Strangers on a Train, when everybody is looking back and forth at the tennis match.
Yeah.
And one guy's head is not moving.
Yeah.
You know, like it draws attention to it. I felt like this was a very similar type thing where everybody's heads turn around just to show that, again, that horn means death.
Yeah.
And like everybody's mesmerized and one guy just starts running and then there's a panic to get on the ferry.
And basically the ferry is like, they're like, we're going to cast off right now. They're telling the military, like, keep people off which is probably like the National Guard, keep people like, you know, and then there's this big fight to like get more people on the boat, but the boat wants to take off. And there's obviously, it's like, people are like, there's more room on the boat.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's chaos. And I love, you know, the way that this is all handled, that Tom Cruise is like trying to get on in the front way, and he decides to walk his family around the side and kind of circumvent the military line, and he's able to get on, but then the guy won't let him get his friend on. He can't get, you know, he's screaming at the guy. He's like, there's more room. There's more room. We can get more people, you know, and they've got cars on the ferry and they start to like push the cars off because they're trying to make more room for more people.
And you know, like some people, they lift the gate and some people jump on and grab onto the gate. And then Robbie goes up to try and help the kids.
And I like the way that this deepens this idea that like Robbie wants.
Yeah.
Robbie's thing is like he wants to be involved. He wants to help. He wants to
fight back, and he needs people to do that. Yeah, which is very, it's very consistent.
He feels like his dad is like maybe holding him back from like participating in a meaningful way. It is, you know, and that.
And also, we forgot to say this too. When he's yelling at his dad, I love the exchange that Robbie has with Tom Cruise, because he says, you know, you've never cared about us. He's like, you just want to dump us off on mom so you can go off on your own, which is like a great, that scene back with the military, again, is just kind of goes into that, like this frustration that these two characters have. But again, it kind of shows that he feels like his dad is holding him back. He feels, you know, he's going to help. He wants to do everything he can, but he sees his dad as a deadbeat. And even though his dad is a deadbeat, he's not a deadbeat because he's trying to protect his kids.
Yeah.
He ultimately is trying to do the good thing. Right. And, but his son doesn't see that. So it really is a great relationship that they have.
Yeah. And it's cool to see Robbie like help these people up over the gate. But yeah, the boat takes off, and this is like such a like the way your stomach just drops for all of the characters in this movie, where you think like, oh man, they just got out of that really intense situation of all of these tripods that are coming down the hill and vaporizing people. And the boat captain just looks down in the water, and you just see these lights in the water coming toward them. And it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
And then the water starts to whirlpool, and this giant tripod just comes up out of the water right next to the ferry. And it's like, you know, and it's just one of those moments where like, this is the moment where it really feels like all is lost. It's like any hope that these characters had of escaping their fate, these things, like any hope that humanity had of successfully fighting back against these things has just, it just keeps getting like darker and darker and darker. And you know, Ray and his family jump off the boat, and they're able to swim away. But I also love this, like when they get out of the water and they run onto shore, when they come up on the hill and they just watch this tripod that's just lighting up all these crowds of people that are, and they just look like insects. It looks like someone taking like a magnifying glass and just burning ants, you know, like it's just,
I mean, they're just, you know, vaporizing all the people. And then I think Rachel runs, she kind of runs away, and they all grab him. And I think this is when they see all the military going up.
But this is also when they're in the woods and all of the clothes start falling down.
Yeah.
In the woods. All of the vaporized people. And that's another one of those images that's so good. But yeah, they do see the military coming up over a hill, and it looks like there's a battle going on. And Robbie's like, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to be a part of this. And Rachel and Ray are trying everything they can to stop him, but Ray's sort of torn between like, I need to keep Rachel safe. I can't let her go up the hill either. And so he tells Rachel to stay put and he's going to go get Robbie. And it's just like, I think this scene is so emotional because what starts to happen is these people think Rachel's lost and they're trying to like take her with them. Yeah. And Ray basically decide like, am I going to go back and get my daughter, or am I going to let my son go? I can't do both. And
it is a really rough decision because his son wants to go. And he's like, you have to let me go. I have to do this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees that Rachel's being taken. And so he lets his son go, and then he runs and he gets Rachel. And then as he gets Rachel, there's this huge explosion over the hill. And he's like, you know, he yells Robbie, but then they have to run. They just have to run away. And this is really more the point where,
well, like a big like flaming tank comes up over the hill, and then all these tripods start coming through the wreckage of the explosion. Yeah. And what's implied from this scene, this is the problem with the thing at the end, is like, what's implied from this scene is like nobody over that hill could have possibly survived what just happened.
Yep.
Like it looks like complete annihilation, and the tripods are just moving through and laying waste to everything in their path. Yeah. And somehow we're meant to believe that Robbie managed to, and I don't,
that's where it really, like,
I don't think he should have survived.
I don't either. And at the very least, he should have been scarred. Like, he should have lost a limb, or, which I think also would, if it was that, there would at least be some sort of commentary to like, some people come back and they're never really the same, right? Going into this theme of kids don't understand the consequences. And sometimes when they go to war, they, you know, they don't come back the same. Or anyway, you know, emotional, mental, or physical scars could, you know, but they don't really touch on that. But anyway, we'll get to that more in a minute. But
to me, this is when the movie starts to come off. And that's,
yeah, I think you're right. This at this point is really where it's like, this does not work.
And it's like, it almost does. Like, I'm interested in Tim Robbins. So like, Tim Robbins is a character who comes up out of his basement and he waves to Ray and Rachel. Yeah. And he brings Ray and Rachel into his basement of like his little farmhouse. There's a lot of just like logical problems with this. It just seems like the aliens would just blow that house apart or.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know why they're like not in like the tripods are like killing everyone in this area, but they're just like not concerned with.
Yeah. With that house.
That one little house. But yeah, basically Ray holes up with this crazy guy. What's his name? Frank or
Harlan.
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 Harlan. Played
by Tim Robbins.
And Tim Robbins is really interesting here. It's a very interesting
character for another movie, I feel.
Right. Like. It just feels like we're too late into the runtime of this film to introduce this character and do this whole thing that they want to do here. And I feel like this whole sequence goes on for too long.
It does.
Like,
it feels much the pace really slows down at this point.
Yeah.
And it feels a lot longer than the rest of the movie has felt.
Yeah. Everything else has been like moving really nice from one set piece to the next. And then we just slow down in Harlan's basement. And the essential conflict is like Ray realizes pretty quickly that Harlan's kind of crazy and that scares him. He's like, uh-oh, I've maybe put my daughter in an unsafe position by holding up in this basement with the crazy guy. But like the screenplay also doesn't seem like it knows what it wants to do with this because when Harlan's talking about like that, this isn't an invasion, this is an extermination. Ray goes like, why'd you bring us into this basement? What have I done? Yeah. And it's like, he's realizing something, but then nothing really happens. They just,
And he's like, oh, we got to fight together, which is like, oh, we're going to build tunnels. We'll build tunnels, which is like, yeah, he's crazy. I get it. But there's I agree. Like, it's not, there's nothing really happening here that's like, it just feels so out of sync with the rest of the movie. It feels very disjointed at this point.
It feels like they want to keep talking about how in an apocalyptic event like this, the monsters in the movie aren't the only ones you need to worry about. Other people are also, but it's like the movie's already covered that. Like we've already established that well enough.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this does anything to deepen or enrich that theme.
Yeah. And I think this is the moment where you really need to have Ray connect with Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they do have a really, really great scene where she's like, sing me the lullaby song.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm sorry, Rachel, I don't know that one. And she's like, well, sing me Hushaby Mountain. And he's like, I don't know that one either. Right. Yeah. Which is like, Tom Cruise gives a great performance because he's like, he really does want to help, but he can't. He doesn't know what these songs are. So he sings her the only thing that he knows, which is Little Deuce Coupe by, you know, the Beach Boys. And it seems to kind of help her, right? And like, that is a great moment in this little section, but that's really the only moment that we get.
I'd say that is an important beat. And the other thing is like, again, like, I like when this movie isn't afraid to get dark. The other thing that ultimately winds up happening in this sequence is that Ray decides he needs to kill Harlan to save his daughter's life. Harlan's making too much noise and Harlan is a liability. And so he puts a blindfold on Rachel and he tells her to cover her ears. And he says, he goes, no matter what you hear in that room, don't take this blindfold off and don't, you know,
and he's like, just
sing Hushaby Mountain to yourself.
Yeah.
And then he goes in the other room and he kills Harlan. And I think it's like the culmination of seeing what Ray is willing to do for his kids and what, and really like Ray realizing like, okay, this is the reality of the world I live in now. I like when he talks to Harlan and he's like, do you understand what you're making me do here? Like, do you understand that if you don't shut up, I'm going to have to, you know, and I like that, but this sequence, the thing that really doesn't work for me in this sequence is the two things like back to back, we have the same sequence in two different ways. So first of all, there's a scene where a tripod brings down like a robotic eye on like a tentacle that searches for people in the basement, and Ray and Harlan and Rachel have to hide from it. And Ray has to kind of convince Harlan to like not do anything stupid. Like Harlan grabs an axe and Ray has to be like, don't, you know, like let's work together here. And they, and it's a sequence that kind of goes on for a little too long.
Yeah.
And they ape a thing from Jurassic Park here where they use a mirror to like trick the thing. Yeah. And
the shoe, like it's kind of a fun sequence, but it also is kind of like, okay, like,
and it just goes on for a long time. And then pretty much the exact same sequence happens like right after, like
with the aliens. Yeah.
And then like the actual Martians come in, and I have never really liked the way.
I don't love them either. Yeah.
I don't love them. I'm fine. I would honestly kind of think it would be better if the only time we saw them was at the very end, was like when it actually like comes out and it dies.
Cool.
Where it's like, oh, like I kind of like them not being seen. I think the scene kind of takes some of the air out of their threat. They just seem, they seem like weirdly stupid in this scene.
They kind
of, they're just, they're sort of like looking at things and being like, bah, 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 and like playing with things and being like spooked by noises. And I'm like, we're meant to believe that they are this ultra super intelligence that has been like growing us like insects and observing us like an ant farm. But then when they come into one of our environments, they're just like, bah. And like they, you know, they just sort of act like clumsy, weird dummies.
Yeah.
And in the tripods, they feel much more imposing and and threatening and kind of unknowable. And
And I think it, you know, I think you're right. Having them only being able to see them at the end probably would have been better, because like this, it doesn't make them more scary.
No, and I think it makes them significantly less scary. And also, it's just the exact same sequence that we just did. Like Rachel and Ray and Harlan are all hiding from the Martians and trying to like hide around different corners. And then Ray and Harlan have this like silent fight over a shotgun. And it's just the same thing. It's like earlier, Harlan was going to use his axe and Ray had to be like, don't.
Then
now Harlan's going to use the shotgun and Ray has to be like, you know, and it's just, it's like the movie just kind of stops here.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it does. And it's again, like, I feel like the rest of this movie needs to be about Ray connecting with Rachel.
Yeah.
And like the whole thing with her space, right? When she puts her hands together, he needs to find something that makes Rachel feel safe. And I feel like they think that that's what this is doing, but it does not hit the mark for me. Like, because like I like the lullaby, but it's never really, nothing has ever really paid off after this scene,
right?
Because like after this sequence, what I would really love, because after this done, he kills him, and then he kills Harlan, and then like Rachel wakes up and she sees that eye again, and Tom Cruise almost cuts that like camera thing off, but then there's a tripod there. So Rachel runs out. Tom Cruise has to go and find her, and she gets taken by the aliens up into their little pod thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Cruise grabs a belt with grenades,
throws like a grenade, a military Humvee.
Yeah. And he gets taken with the grenades. And then I kind of also always hate this. Like
people
like
catcher.
Not necessarily. I don't like it's like the Finding Nemo thing. Why has nobody ever done this ever before? Like they show one guy gets taken up and he gets pulled up and nobody does anything for that guy.
Yeah.
But like,
but maybe like, it's because in this instance, the military guy sees that Tom Cruise is bringing the grenades. Like, that's how I justify it, is that like a soldier sees that, like, oh, he's going to put the grenades in there, but we need to pull him out.
I don't know
that like that's the understanding, but it is one of those things where it's like, oh, our main characters just have like really convenient plot armor. And it's also like, I mean, like we've been introduced to like all this new stuff. Like the Martians are now terraforming Earth with all of these like red plants, and we see them like put a red human meat down on the ground and suck all of the blood out of the human. And then they spray the blood to like, to like fertilizer to like grow their Martian plants. And I'm like, I think that that's all like, again, really dark and messed up imagery that I think is really cool to have in this movie. I just think that this whole sequence in Harlan's basement needs to go a lot faster.
Yes. I think, or just take it out or change it somehow.
I'd be fine with them going into this basement and realizing, oh, this guy's not safe because he's unstable. And Ray realizes he has to kill him. And having that all, like, think about the scene in A Quiet Place when like John Krasinski comes across that guy in the woods who he can tell is about to scream, and he's trying to be like, please don't, please don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like, I don't think it needs to be that fast, but I think it can happen. This whole sequence is like 20 minutes long, and I think it could be like 5 minutes.
I agree. I think it either. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there's gotta be a different way to kind of, cause this is when the movie stops. Like, The sequence after, even with the grenade, like, you know, they pull him out of the thing and it blows up. That's still kind of a fun sequence. Like,
yeah,
it's still kind of like, oh, that's exciting, even though they took, you know, like, it's a little, but if they could have another exciting scene or just something different, but it is hard because I don't know what that would be.
Also, just like the plot armor of being like, well, you're lucky enough to be the people who are going to get picked up and put in the people catcher basket instead of just being the people who are just indiscriminately vaporized by our vaporize ray. It's like, oh, okay, I guess we're at the point of the alien invasion where they're no longer just indiscriminately zapping people into dust. Yeah. They're now using us as fertilizer, which is like, well, why weren't... And, you know, and I guess you could, there could be a logic where it says that they're going to like cull a lot of the herd and then they're going to grab the leftovers and use them as fertilizer for their terraforming. The logic is fine, but you're right. It's like, we need something that makes Rachel feel safe with Ray.
Yes.
And it, and I don't know that the lullaby gets there. And I think that him killing this guy is something that maybe she couldn't fully understand, but it definitely is something we understand as the audience.
Yeah.
But we need something for her. But yeah, he goes at, maybe she gets it that like once he, when he's willing to like be captured by the aliens to go after her, and you know, that probably does something for her. But yeah, basically after they blow this tripod up, they're just wandering with a crowd of people into Boston and they come across the military, and the military tells them that tripods have started behaving weird and falling over and crashing. And
there's one last erratically, and
there's kind of one last little action scene here where a tripod shows up and Tom Cruise notices that birds are landing on it, which means that their shields are down. And so they shoot it with some, you know,
grenade, like some
rocket launchers, and they,
and they bring it down and it blows up, and Tom Cruise is the one who tells them.
Yeah.
But then they go into this little like bridge thing and they find safety, and it dies, and then the alien falls out, and it's just like, oh, you know, and like it I think ultimately, like, in a movie you want your main character to be an active protagonist, which means they're making choices to do things that influence how the plot goes, right? And this is, I feel like Tom Cruise is much more of a passive protagonist in this climax, because he just, I mean, he tells them about it, but he does nothing. I feel like it would almost be better if it was, first of all, a little bit more intense, but if in the intensity, if Ray was able to calm down Rachel, like if he was, you know, if all these crazy things are going on and she's having a panic attack, and he has, if he sings her that lullaby. So instead of doing like the space thing, if he does something that they have now come up with that makes her feel safe, I feel like that would be so much more of a payoff of their relationship.
Yeah, because he doesn't need to be the person who beats the aliens.
No.
Like this is always been a story about just sort of an observer.
Yes.
Like from the original H.G. Wells book, it's kind of like Cloverfield, how it's like, it's not about, Cloverfield's not about the government who's in charge of addressing this giant kaiju that's loose in New York City.
Yeah.
It's just about random people who are experiencing this event. And that's what this movie is. But the story for this character is his journey as a father and like reconnecting with his kids. So you're right. But this finale probably almost has them be too involved. If anything, it should be more like this thing just sort of happens, and they're just hearing about it. And yeah. it turns out is that like the aliens just didn't know that there were microorganisms in Earth's atmosphere that were poisonous to them after some amount of time. That it's kind of like all of the bacteria that humans have evolved to live with.
Yeah.
I like Morgan Freeman's little narration where he's like, mankind has earned the right to live here through millennia of adaptation and evolution. We have learned how to adapt to all of the airborne viruses and for the most part, there's still people that die from airborne viruses. This is like an ending like Signs where people are like, why'd they go to a planet if they knew they were allergic to water? And I'm always like, we have robots on Mars and we're trying to think of like, could we build colonies on Mars? And we know that in order for us to live there, we would have to deal with a planet that is like mostly deadly to us, you know?
Yeah.
And I've never really agreed with the criticism that it's stupid that the aliens wound up being allergic to Earth. I'm like, to me, that's one of the, like, the problems of intergalactic and interstellar travel Earth is already a dangerous enough planet for us to live here.
Yeah.
Any other planet we tried to find, like, that's what I like about the movie Interstellar, is it's like, hey, when you're looking for other possible habitable planets, you're still dealing with a planet that's like mostly not great.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, no, totally. And I think I have no problem at all with the aliens dying because of disease or you know, microscopic organisms. That has I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
The thing that I have problem with is what we've just talked about, whereas this emotional arc doesn't feel fulfilled because Tom Cruise and his daughter still don't seem to have the relationship that I wish that they could have. I mean, they still did make, it's not like it's horrible, but I wanted it to be more. I wanted them to have a moment where we get this payoff of her having a panic attack and turning to Ray for comfort. And I didn't feel like we got that. And I feel like that would be so much more fulfilling if we could have had that.
Well, like him being able to do it, like him, you know, because she does like that lullaby moment. She's like, will you sing to me? And he's like, I'm sorry, I don't know any of the lullabies that you like. And he's not really able to. So he tries his best and he sings this Beach Boy song to her.
Yeah.
And it's sweet, but I think that we need the moment where she comes to him for help and he's able to provide what she needs in that moment to complete this like journey that this father's been on.
Yes.
Where, you know, like the whole movie, we've seen everything he's going through to try to show up for his kids.
Yeah.
But she finally sees that she's, you know, safe with dad and that like dad loves her and that, like, and we just don't like, I feel like if anything, the movie tries to make Tom Cruise too much a part of the finale of the war.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, I don't really think that like he should have anything to do with it.
No.
Like,
and what he does is like, just look at the birds. That's all. I mean, like there's nothing, it's definitely not necessary.
Yeah. And then I think that like, I'm pretty sure they shot an ending of this film where Robbie wasn't there at the house, because the ending of the movie is they go to grandma's house and everyone's there, mom and Tim and grandma and grandpa, and Robbie is there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I remember hearing that they shot a version of this movie where Robbie's not there and that it tested poorly. But I'm like, I kind of think this is something you've got to commit to in this film is like, I think that the movie, all of the darkness that the movie has been willing to explore in the previous runtime, it feels like it's all like at the end of the movie, they're just like, ah, don't worry, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Like, no, totally. It's all good now.
Yeah. And it like, so Steven Spielberg, you know, he grew up and his parents got divorced.
Yeah.
And that was it's a big thing in his life.
Yeah.
And he felt like, so when he made Close Encounters of the Third Kind, he had a dad leave the family to go for the aliens. Mm-hmm. And he kind of always regretted that. So he wanted this movie to be about a family who stays together, which I see. I see that and I understand it. But you've got Robbie. There has to be some consequences for what Robbie did. Yeah. I agree with you. I think he probably should have died. I think it would have made it more impactful. He still tried to, because no matter what you do, sometimes your kids, if they decide to go to war or whatever, like sometimes their life is out of your hands. At a certain point, their life is out of your hands, right? They go off and they have to live their own life. But this one, it's just like there's no consequences. So either you have him die, mm-hmm. or he has lost something, like he's injured and he is not the same person when he comes back. But still, I think the more impactful one is if he doesn't come back at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. But again, there's a lot to really like about this movie. There is. Yeah, that's War of the Worlds 2005 by Steven Spielberg, directed by Steven Spielberg. Let's get into our scores. Okay, we give scores out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a score for technical achievement. That's just sort of the craft of the film, the writing, the effects, the acting, the musical score, all of that stuff. We give a score for the ending. How well did the movie stick the landing? We give a score for rewatchability. How likely are you to rewatch the movie? How well does the movie play on rewatch? We give a score for cultural significance and impact, and we give a score for our subjective opinion of the film. Just how much did we subjectively enjoy watching the movie? So Kramer, what is your technical rating for War of the Worlds?
My technical rating is a 7. This is, I mean, everything that we talked about, there's so much great stuff in this movie. It's handled by, you know, one of the best directors ever, Steven Spielberg. And like, you know, there's some great sequences, some really, really great themes, really great stuff. So visual effects are really, really hold up for the most part on pretty much all of these. I'm docking the 3 points because of the emotional lack that there is at the end. And yeah, that's the biggest thing that like really just takes away from the movie for me. I really want to feel more satisfied by the end. And I don't really get that.
Yeah. I gave it an 8 technically. I feel like there's so much here that I'm really impressed with. I'm really impressed, as I've said, with the way that this movie punches above its weight emotionally. Mm-hmm. It does a lot more than it needs to do for a genre film like this. And I'm always really impressed by it every time I return to it.
Yeah.
I think all of the performances are stellar. I think a lot of the writing really, really works.
Yes.
And I've just never really felt like the ending quite works. So that definitely docked points for that. I feel like the sequence at Harlan's basement lasts too long and maybe doesn't even need to be in the movie. Who knows? Maybe it's a better movie without that altogether, but I do like kind of the darkness of where that goes.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't talk about is I'm pretty sure John Williams did the music here again, as he always does. Yeah. And I feel like this is a musical score that doesn't really jump off the screen at you.
No.
It sort of feels like extra track, like B-sides from like another John Williams score where it just sort of feels like leftovers, like kind of like if you went to like an AI and typed in like make some John music style intense music. There's nothing distinctive about this score from John Williams. Now, again, if you're going to get like a bland, non-distinct movie score, you could do a lot worse than having John Williams make that score for you. Since John Williams always is able to come up with these unique, interesting melodies that are so distinctive to each movie that he does, I always notice it when there's a movie that he did the score for where it's like, oh, there's nothing about this score that really like comes alive at any point and defines the film in any way. And it's like, maybe there needed to be kind of a theme between Ray and Rachel that could be you. I just feel like maybe the music could be used a little bit more effectively. But I do think I don't know. So maybe I'd give it like a 7.5, but I have it in an 8 right now. What about the ending?
The ending I gave a 5. It really does fall off when they go into Ray's house. And as we talked about, it doesn't seem to recover. And that the ending of The Birds, like I want that emotional payoff. So it really lacks in the ending. The first two acts, I'm totally with the movie. Once it gets to the third act, which is pretty much when they go into Ray's basement, it falls apart pretty hard. So
I agree. I gave it a 6 because I don't hate it. Like it all still is like, it's definitely not a thing where I'm like, wow, this ending ruins the whole movie. It's like, it works for me. It's just that the movie is kind of great up until Harlan's basement, you know, like the movie is like really, really good and like surprisingly good every time you watch it. And then it just sort of ends in a way that's like fine.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And fine just doesn't seem to be good enough for what this movie had going for it in its first two acts.
Yeah, I agree.
Rewatchability.
Rewatchability, I did 6.5. It is a fun movie to rewatch. But again, when you get to that third act, it's a little bit of a slog to get through the Harlan scenes. But it's, you know, it's fun. Every time I rewatch it, I'm not bored. So yeah, it's a good one.
I gave it a 7. I always enjoy watching this movie. I always feel like I catch more details, and I'm always interested in just the way that Spielberg manages to make this movie better than it has any right to be, you know? And I agree with Sid, what she said last week. Dakota Fanning rules in this movie. It's always a fun ride, and it doesn't end so bad that it like makes me angry. It's just always that like the ending never really fully works for me. Cultural impact and significance.
Cultural impact, I did a 6. It is a, I think there was, you know, I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and the critic score is a lot more than the audience score. And I just remember kind of everybody kind of having the same feeling, like this was good, but it wasn't great. I think there are some influences that it's had, but I think it overall didn't really hit the mark in what it could have been. So, but it still is it's a great movie that you can really learn a lot from. So I didn't want to score it too low, but I felt 6 was appropriate.
I gave it a 6 as well for kind of the same reason. I feel like this is a movie that as it gets older, when people return to it, they go like, oh, that movie's pretty good. Like and I think it has a pretty good reputation, and I think its reputation has gotten better with age. But it's, you know, I don't think it's in the top 10 of Spielberg's catalog. I don't even know if it's in the top 20. I'd have to think about it, but it is solid. And I think it's got a reputation that's gotten more solid with time. Your subjective feeling.
My subjective score is a 6.5. I do enjoy it, but the ending really pulls it down. And it, like you said, it doesn't make it a bad movie, but it does always leave me like, oh, this could have been so much better. But it's still, I will rewatch it if I had to, for sure. It's a fun ride for most of the time.
I gave it a 7.5. I liked this movie. I've always liked this movie. I enjoyed rewatching it. I just kept thinking like, man, Spielberg's a good filmmaker. Tom Cruise is a good actor. You know, like there's a lot. I think there's enough here that I really enjoy that ending doesn't like. And the ending's like good enough.
For
me to go, the movie works, you know. But it is a movie where it is disappointing because it's like you feel like this movie could be like an 8 or a 9.
With
a really satisfying payoff.
Yes.
And it just doesn't quite get there.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's War of the Worlds 2005. If you want to keep up with the show, we're going to be doing something a little interesting next week because there's not a whole lot of movies, big movies coming out for the next few weeks. So we're kind of digging back into the archives. Since this was kind of the summer of Superman, and we did our episode on James Gunn's Superman, and we also did an episode on Richard Donner's 1978 movie Superman, we've had a lot of people requesting that we also do Man of Steel, because that's kind of the big debate online, is like, who's better? Is it the Snyderverse or the Gunn universe that's being made? And we're both people who kind of like both, who kind of feel like there are elements in what Snyder was doing that are really cool and really fun, and who think there are elements in what James Gunn is doing that are really exciting and really fun. And I think that it's totally fine to like both.
Yes.
But next week, we're going to be talking about the first two movies of the now deceased DCEU. Yeah. So we're going to be watching Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, specifically the extended version.
Yes.
Because I think it's called
Snyder Cut or whatever.
Yeah, like the Ultimate Edition or something.
Yeah.
Which I just think is the better movie. But we're just going to be talking about what in those films we think works and what doesn't work. We're not going to be doing like a traditional full plot breakdown, but those are the two movies we're going to watch if you want to watch along with the show. And we're going to give our thoughts on what we think works, what we think doesn't work, our thoughts on maybe what happened in the construction of that cinematic universe that sort of spelled its doom early on in its construction. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot to like in both of those movies, and there's definitely a lot to criticize. So
yes, there is.
So we'll be getting into it. Like, share, comment, subscribe, tell everybody about the show, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.